Welcome back to the Bitcoin Layer. I'm Nick Bhatia. Today we welcome back veteran trader Craig Shapiro. He has often come on this show and shared his macro overviews as well as his own positions. And that's what we find so valuable. Craig has money on the line. Craig, welcome back.
Thanks for having me again, Nick. Appreciate it.
Give us your overview, Craig. A lot has happened in markets over the last few months since we've spoken. Let us know what you've thought so far this summer, how you've processed the latest with Jackson Hole, the risk spill that we had a couple weeks ago, and how you're positioned.
Certainly. So, look, I mean, in my view, the economy has been showing increased signs of slowing down and of strain and of labor market deterioration since, I'd say, early in the second quarter. And I think that's continued as we've pushed into the third quarter. However, the Fed, by design, has discussed, basically being late to the party with respect to easing financial conditions further, because the fight against inflation has been difficult. And there's been, various fits and starts. And, they thought they had it corrected at the end of last year. Then first quarter of this year, we had a reacceleration. So they've been remiss to start this this cutting cycle that the market has been anticipating really, forever. I mean, it's almost as if every time we have a Fed meeting, the market is ready to say, is it over yet? Is it over yet? The hiking cycle. And finally, as we push through the summer, we've been getting closer. And then at the July meeting, which was only 3.5 weeks ago, the Fed decided not to cut rates and basically said it doesn't have enough evidence yet that inflation's moving sustainably down to 2%, and that the labor market, although slowing, is not showing, really any signs of material strain. So I think when the Fed gave that message at the end of July, folks got a bit concerned that the Fed was going to be late to the easing cycle. And so the market reaction at the end of July, early August, really started to show some volatility expansion and folks starting to believe that maybe the Fed was just going to really be behind the curve, be tight for too long, and then the economy would go into a much more protracted downturn. And I think when you combine that with some of the cross-asset stuff that was going on in Japan had kind of commenced its rate hike at the end of July as well, even though it was a small rate hike. We'd seen, dollar yen had really moved materially weaker, a dollar weaker from 160 plus down to, the mid 140s. And so that led to a carry trade unwind and a lot of excuses and a lot of, crazy, volatile market behavior to kickstart August. And then as often happens, when volatility gets out of control, but we don't get a follow through, what we have is a dynamic of vol selling that comes back into the market. And this time, through the second and third weeks of August, we had a very material vol sell-off as folks maybe started to take a step back and say, well, maybe things aren't so bad. Maybe the economy isn't so bad. The Fed will get there eventually. Maybe Japan's not so bad. There were some comments out of the BOJ that said, well, maybe we won't hike again. And so I think there was a collective relief from the market in the middle of August that led to a resumption of the rally and really what turned out to be a pretty historic vol selling event. I think that the VIX kind of came back down from high 60s to or mid 60s back down to the low teens in record time.
The Bitcoin Layer is proud to be sponsored by Unchained, the leader in Bitcoin financial services. Unchained empowers you to take full control of your Bitcoin with collaborative multi-sig vaults where you hold 2 of 3 keys and benefit from a Bitcoin security partner. This is a really important feature. You can purchase Bitcoin directly into your cold storage with Unchained's trading desk and completely eliminate your exchange risks. Unchained also offers the best IRA product in the industry. You can convert easily your 401k or IRA into Bitcoin while keeping control of your keys. Don't pay more in taxes than you have to. Go talk to them today, unchained.com/TBL, and make sure you use code TBL for $99 off when you create an account. Imagine losing your Bitcoin fortune to a house fire or to accidental damage. A complete nightmare, right? It's estimated that over 30% of Bitcoin are lost forever, and poor seed phrase security is a big reason why. That is why we use Stampseed, a really cool DIY kit that allows you to stamp your seed into these titanium plates. So let me show you how it works. They send you a titanium plate. Part of the kit comes with this really easy to use tracker. You slide your seed phrase into the tracker. Now you take the letters that they send you, you take a letter out, and you place it into your device, and then you take this incredibly heavy duty titanium hammer and you hammer your letters into this titanium plate. Your full seed phrase will be stamped into this titanium plate that is fireproof, accident-proof, damage-proof. These tools have been specifically designed by people working in titanium stamping for over 14 years. So go check them out today, stampseed.com, and make sure you use code TBL for 15% off of your order.
But look, I think as we kind of headed into last Friday, which was a seminal Jackson Hole speech, which Powell has now given several years in a row, and the Fed chair typically gives. It doesn't always have to be an incredibly important speech, but there's been times over the course of the last 15 years where it has really moved markets. And most recent memory, 2 years ago, when markets were rallying into August 22nd, 22, and inflation was really running hot, Powell allegedly rewrote his speech and created this pain speech, an 8-minute speech of hawkishness that the market was taken by surprise and really led to a swoon into August, September, and October of 2022. So there's been times in the past when Jackson Hole has really mattered. Coming into this Jackson Hole event, look, folks were incredibly dovish about what Powell was going to say. He's going to commence this rate cutting cycle. The economy has slowed, the labor market has slowed, and inflation's moving more sustainably back to target. And so markets were priced for that, with stocks nearly recovering all of the August malaise, the bond market looking for north of 3 cuts for this year and 8 cuts in the next 8 or 9 meetings, with an increased chance of even a 50 basis point start in September. So I think there was a lot of dovish expectation for last Friday. And what did Powell deliver? He knocked the cover. He knocked the ball out of the park. It surprised me, frankly. I didn't think that, based on the communication that he had been giving for a very long time, I didn't suspect that he was going to deliver that kind of extremely dovish message, because the data really hasn't, changed much from the July meeting. We've only had 3 weeks of data. We did have a softer NFP print, payroll print, in the first week of August, but the rest of the data has been mixed. Services PMI was very strong. Retail sales came in better than expected. So it wasn't clear that the data would have suggested such a strong pivot from Powell, but he came out and delivered a very, very dovish message, and seems to be, in a way, maybe trying to corral the rest of the Fed to get on board with cutting, really maybe cement his foot as the leader of the Fed and say, look, we're cutting, and everyone needs to get in line, and it's time. I mean, the labor market is showing signs of strain, inflation. We've done a really good job. It's time for us to say mission accomplished, and let's make sure that we don't have a significant growth deceleration or even a recession, very close to the election. So he delivered that message. For me at the time, again, wasn't really expecting it, but felt like the Fed chair is coming out and saying very dovish things, with the S&P close to its all-time highs, with credit spreads basically record tight, with inflation running, still reasonably above normal, above 2%, call it 2.5, 2.6% camp. And unemployment, at 4.2% would be considered maximum employment, really for the last 50 years. So he's coming out and saying dovish things when the economy and markets are pretty good. So for me, that was a sign that, to reengage in some of these, what I call kind of dollar debasement ideas. I mean, whether it's gold or whether it's Bitcoin, those are my two kind of go-to proxies for on Friday, which was, this is a Fed chair who's going to, make sure that we don't have a growth deceleration that leads to a big recession. And he will be very comfortable cutting rates aggressively to make sure that that doesn't happen. And so I feel like we always knew there would come a point in time when the Fed would need to pivot aggressively. And whether it's the government deficits being as big as they are and interest expense being as large as it is, eventually that would have to come down, and inflation, moving back to target, even slowly, you know, it wasn't clear that the Fed was going to risk a big recession to kind of get that last mile. Again, I didn't think it was going to come, but, you know, you have to kind of react to when you get the, you know, the news in real time. And so, you know, I did, and so I kind of pushed the portfolio into a weak dollar construct, you know, getting longer, much longer gold, longer, you know, some Bitcoin. And as far as equities are concerned, look, I mean, I've not been a particularly large bull on equities, and I'm still not. I just don't see, you know, value here across a wide swath of equities. If we're heading into a growth deceleration that has basically spooked the Fed, that's really not going to be a good setup for earnings outlooks and earnings expectation reacceleration. So, you know, I'm kind of more on the line of neutral and negative on equities, and would rather play that dollar debasement idea through store of value assets and you know, and some other and some other commodities. So that's kind of how I'm set up right now.
And so so Jackson Hole was a crucial pivot for you in terms of positioning. It greatly informed your decision, and that it's very telling for us to learn that, because we recognized the word unmistakable as something that was a very strong word, unmistakable referring to the labor slowdown. And so a very dovish stance from Powell. And what Craig is telling us, ladies and gentlemen, is that Powell, despite all of these favorable economic readings, including record tight credit spreads, the other side of that from equity land just basically means all-time highs in stocks. It just means record creditworthiness from corporations. And inflation still above target, and Powell is coming out. So he's shifting to a weaker dollar. What do you think? Do you agree with them, Craig, that they've won on inflation? Or do you still think they're gaslighting us on the inflation side, but you've just had to pivot the portfolio to a different approach now that they're really outwardly dovish?
Yeah, I think it's more, I would say it's more the latter, in that, look, inflation has come down across a, you know, across goods and, you know, across housing to some degree, less so on services, but it's coming down. You know, have we reached a sustainable 2% environment? I think, you know, clearly not. And clearly the average American doesn't feel like we are in a 2% inflationary world. But, you know, for the Fed, you know, I think that they felt like, or at least Powell feels like, they've gotten a lot done. And they really went up. We've gone a long way, and we've been at these very high interest rates for over a year now. So, you know, some of that tightening, or more of that tightening, is going to continue to affect the economy. And so over the course of the next few months, I suspect they believe that inflation will be back down towards, you know, towards 2% by the end of the year or early part of next year. I think, and Powell referenced this in the speech, he referenced this idea that the Fed has done a great job in dampening inflation expectations. And so as long as inflation expectations are under control, I think the Fed believes that their actions will not lead to a reacceleration of inflation. I think, ironically, you know, inflation expectations since 10 o'clock on Monday have now ripped back higher again, you know, several basis points. And they were hit kind of in the sell-off in August, but they, you know, rapidly kind of moved right back in, right? Gold has moved up, oil's moved up, grains have moved up, silver have moved up, all commodities have moved up in a sizable way. And so, look, I think there's an element here of that the Fed is sowing the seeds of the next re-acceleration of inflation story, you know, at some point in 2022. And, you know, what I mentioned over the weekend was I think that the impact of rate cuts as the Fed commences this cycle will lead to a resurgence of inflation before it saves the labor market, right? So that to me, we're kind of entering into more of a, you know, future stagflationary environment where the impact of these rate cuts is not going to arrest the labor market declines, but we're going to find ourselves in this weaker dollar environment where commodities find a floor, probably start moving higher again, and, you know, goods inflation and oil inflation and food inflation starts to come back earlier than it should have. I mean, when Powell delivered that message 2 years ago and talked about pain, We were expecting, or at least I was expecting, that would be an economic slowdown would really be delivered and inflation would really be slayed, such that we weren't talking about this. We're not going to be talking about this in 2025 and beyond. But it seems like he kind of cut it too soon. And so now I think we're going to have an inflation story earlier in 2025. And look, and that's regardless of who wins the election, I think. But either party or either candidate is really, supporting a spending platform, no matter how you look, or a deficit growing platform, however you look at it. So I think we're going to be back into an inflationary environment in 2025 sooner than we should have been, if Powell would have just kind of delivered on this growth slowdown that he originally thought was necessary to bring inflation back down.
And this is a very important component of past conversations with Craig. The conversations we've had recently were about how quickly the Fed impacts these financial conditions. And the financial conditions, when they change, feeds directly back into inflation expectations via the financial markets channel, the portfolio channel. And it's a crucial component to Craig's framework. And we think it's important to emphasize. When the Fed pivots like they did, and they say the word unmistakable slowdown in the labor market, they trigger an increase in every single asset class, basically, from equities to commodities. So when equities go up, what does it do? It hits the portfolio channel via the wealth effect. It makes everyone feel wealthier. Everything is fine now when they go out and spend. So it hits the confidence channel. Then the commodities go up. And so that hits the actual input cost variable. And both of them together immediately reverse a downtrend in inflation. It's almost on a spot basis. The Fed, under their framework, would laugh at that. They would say, no, there's no way that a speech on Friday can affect inflation on Monday. But that's actually what Craig is talking about here. And we would agree, because from a raw weak dollar perspective, which is his positioning, that is going to lead to net higher inflation. So, Craig, what are your thoughts? Did I summarize that correctly?
Yeah, I think that's really how, I think about it. And I think the Fed does laugh at that framework. I mean, Powell didn't reference financial conditions at all in this speech, and rarely does. There are others on the Fed who maybe have more of a markets background, whether it's, Lori Logan or, some others who talk more about financial conditions and have become concerned about how the Fed's dovish policy or dovish rhetoric has led to a loosening of financial conditions. And I think that the loosening of financial conditions has helped create this K-shaped economy where, the homeowners and the rich and, folks with assets continue to do very well and continue to spend enough into the economy and are doing fine. But an increasing part of the population, middle income and poor folks who are, who are renters, who don't have as many assets, are really struggling in this high interest rate environment. So I think what Powell and the Fed is trying to do is they're trying to lower interest rates for the, those folks who have high credit card bills, who are paying 25%, this can help that, or folks who need to buy a car who can't pay 12, 13%, can pay 8 or 9. So I think the Fed is trying to lower interest rates, to help those folks, but doesn't realize that this is just going to continue to exacerbate animal spirits and inflation expectations for the wealthy to continue to acquire assets. And one of the mistakes that the Fed has really made is by taking such a passive approach to its balance sheet and to quantitative tightening and to the outlook for which assets it's going to hold on its balance sheet, I think is really has made this problem worse. And so, and again, this is something that they should be looking at. Maybe they'll look at it in their framework. They have a 5-year framework that they're going to talk about for next year. And so maybe the balance sheet will become more of a part of that. But, really all throughout this year, Powell has said the balance sheet's really not that important. Financial conditions really are not that important to us. And so I think we are left now in a situation where the Fed is going to be cutting rates, pretty aggressively, or the market expects the Fed to cut rates pretty aggressively over the course of the next year. And the question really is, does this economy need it? Is the economy slowing that rapidly? And will those rate cuts lead to a reacceleration of inflation because of a weak dollar that kind of leads to a commodities up type scenario? And I think the jury's kind of out on that, but that's what we'll be looking for data over the course of the next few weeks and months to determine whether or not we're going to go into a hard landing, or if this is just going to be kind of a soft patch and a reacceleration in 2025 that leads to larger inflation down the road.
Yes, we've been watching yields break down and the dollar break down as a result of that, or as one trade. And it's definitely, it definitely has us thinking about the reaction function on inflation and what that might mean going forward. Craig, I wanted to ask you, you talk about a couple things, the balance sheet and vol selling. Let's talk about volatility first. We live in a world in which spikes in volatility are rapidly sold. Can you explain to someone that might not be so familiar with volatility and its impact on financial conditions and all these things that we've been talking about today? How does, you mentioned the record time that the VIX went from 60 to the teens. Discuss vol selling and just what that, the impact more generally.
Yeah, look, I think, very broadly speaking, what we have seen, for the last, several decades really, is that when markets start to dysfunction, the central banks start to get involved and they start to get worried, or they start to, maybe they even act to prevent that, or, and when things get really crazy, they put in facilities to dampen things down. And we can look back to the late 90s with LTCM. We could look into, the great financial crisis. So we can even look as recently as this Silicon Valley Bank situation in March of last year. And so the speed, it's like the speed with which the central bank reacts to market distress has grown more rapidly each time. And so people think whenever there's a little bit of volatility, well, we know that there's a Fed put. We know the Fed is going to come in and prevent that from happening because they do not want to see market dislocation or market dysfunction. And the most important market for the Fed is the U.S. Treasury market. They certainly react aggressively when U.S. Treasuries exhibit characteristics of market dysfunction. But the broad financial market takes that and says, well, they also, the S&P also is something that the Fed looks at. And so when volatility spikes happen, they're going to do something, whatever that is, because they've shown historically that they will. And so I think what we get is these situations where volatility comes from a variety of different sources. Typically, they could come from geopolitical things, they could come from economic data, or they could come from missteps or perceived missteps by central banks, whether it was, the Fed at July meeting or the BOJ and their meeting, right? These central banks sometimes create volatility because they do something that is counter to what the market believes or what have you, or the market believes that a particular action was going to come at a certain price, and the central bank says, it's not really at that price. And so we rapidly move to the next price to find where that put is struck. But look, I think that's what happened in this most recent bout, is we didn't even really get any follow through from that selling or from that risk on event risk off event in the early part of August before markets kind of said, if this keeps going, someone's going to do something about it. So we might as well just get in front of that. And I think that's exacerbated the most in the equity market, because now we have zero data expiry option activity, right? Every day, the largest flow in the market is the zero data expiry activity in S&P and in NASDAQ. And so it's like in any particular day, at a certain, if we don't believe there's going to be any more risk for that day, vol selling just comes in for that day. And so then we wake up the next day and then vol selling could come in the next day. And so you see this less in fixed income vol and in FX vol and in commodity vol, because they don't have that similar, that same dynamic. And so I think one of the things that's interesting about this bout is while the VIX and equity volatility had returned basically back down to, you know, very muted levels as of last week, fixed income vol has not returned to very muted levels. Japanese yen vol has not returned to very muted levels. Oil and gold vol did not return. So cross asset wise, there is still there is still volatility under the surface that is picking up a variety of things, whether it's uncertainty about the global economy, uncertainty about the election outcomes, uncertainty about geopolitical risk. And yet the equity market has dislodged or disconnected from that because of this dynamic of zero data actuary behavior. But I think from here, what we have is a situation where, again, the global economy appears to be showing signs of sluggishness. China doesn't seem to be in a particularly great spot. German economic data has not been great. The U.S. labor market data is continuing to deteriorate. U.S. consumer seems a bit strained. And we are in a seasonally challenging part of the year in September and October. And that's even without the election, which is creating, I think, a whole bout of additional uncertainty. I think we are in a tough spot here for broad risk assets. While that may not mean we're going to have, a massive systemic event between now and the election, because we know central banks will be there, I think the economic weakness that's coming in without the Fed, really aggressively stimulating now is likely to lead to broadly lower risk asset prices between now and the election. So that's kind of how I'm thinking about it. But beyond that, these weak dollar plays, whether it's gold or commodities or Bitcoin, I think will relatively outperform in this setup here where growth is going to decline, and then will really outperform later when the money printing really starts to accelerate.
What do you think they're going to do on balance sheet? You mentioned QT, their framework. What's your outlook there? Can you talk about mortgages too? Because I know that impacts vol selling.
Look, I mean, I think there's Fed Governor Waller gave a speech in March where he talked about some things the Fed should or could do to help normalize its balance sheet over time. The Fed currently has still a wide mix of securities on its balance sheet. It still owns a lot of mortgages. It's not clear that the Fed should be long-term in the mortgage business. I think various Fed members have said that over time they'd like to not own any mortgage-backed securities. They've also said for effective monetary policy communication and having it work, it'd be better if they owned a greater percentage of bills as opposed to bonds. And so you could see a situation, where the Fed starts to more actively try to reduce its MBS holdings through sales or stops reinvesting proceeds into bonds and only into bills. And so they can shift their balance sheet. These are things that they could do that would help to raise term premiums and to lower or tighten financial conditions to offset some of the loosening that happens from cutting rates. And this would be a way to kind of prevent the K-shaped recovery and K-shaped economy from continuing to diverge. These would be things that would help push that K back in line. Not clear that they're going to do it though. And so they have a five-year review that comes up in 2025. The balance sheet's likely to be part of the review process, but it's going to take months, if not quarters, before we really get, I think, any more information on what this might look like.
Craig Shapiro, thank you so much for joining us again and sharing your book, which is something that not everyone does, and it's not something that we get to have access to all the time. So we appreciate you talking your positions through with us. Please tell people where they can find your writing and some of your trading services.
Sure. Yeah, I'm pretty active on Twitter. You could find me at my handle, which is CES921, which is my initials. I also do some advising for Leduc Trading. And I run my own, I run my own capital. So I appreciate you having me on.
Craig, thank you so much. I'm Nick Bhatia. We'll catch you guys next time.